And, well, it's good to see you guys. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I am a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. Yeah, that's right. And through the grace of God and this fellowship and some wonderful, wonderful people that have helped me along the way and still help me. It's just a wonderful, wonderful deal. And I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to talk to you guys. And I had the pleasure, I'm asked to do this. And I had the pleasure of speaking to another group at 12 o'clock today, the Brickell group. And now I have the pleasure of being with you and talking. We're going to talk a little bit about the sixth step. I'm going to share a little bit about my experience. And that's all I have to share. What's that? What is that?
A cell phone.
A cell phone? Don't worry, I'm in a good mood. I'm not going to start on that. You know, because it happens. It could be an accident. I'm sure it was an accident, you know. But, you know, what I tell people sometimes, I say, if you're willing to go to any length, and, you know, alcoholics think like any length is somebody's going to ask them to climb Mount Everest or rob a bank or survive cancer or my kid dies. And what we don't realize in Alcoholics Anonymous, any length is turning off a cell phone for an hour. Now, you may not think that's a big deal, but I mean, to an alcoholic, that's like surviving cancer. You know, to an obsessive compulsive alcoholic that thinks he's the most important thing in the world and the president's going to call him any second, and he can't miss one text message for an hour, asking somebody to turn off a cell phone for an hour is like insulting, you know. And sometimes that's all it takes. That's all God wants. He doesn't want any big deals. He just wants you to turn off your cell phone. Not talk while somebody else is talking, stuff like that. You know, to a certain extent, this has to do with the sixth step, so we'll discuss it. But listen, it really does, you know, because you don't have to get rid of the alcohol, which is really a symptom of, you know, when you come in here, you know, I came in here, you know, you're so dumb by the time you get here. You know, I drank because I was awake. You guys probably needed reasons. Awake was good enough for me. And, you know, what I like to say is I drank until the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards. And I wound up here at 31 years of age, and things weren't going so good. I noticed that's a pattern. You know, one of the things about, God willing, if I stay sober, I'll have 31 years in January, which isn't a record. My sponsor has 57. But one of the things that happens after you've been around for a while, because experience is my sponsor. You know, because I'm an alcoholic, I have all sorts of up the yin. I have opinions up the yin yang, and of course, I think I'm right. You know, and I'm also a recovering know-it-all, and you know, I think I know everything and all that stuff. But you know, the bottom line, the great thing about experience versus theory, what I think and opinion is, my sponsor used to say to me, says, you know, Russ, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. There's just something about actually doing the deal and going through it rather than, well, this is what I think. You know, you got a lot in AA where it goes around the room where they're talking about the third step and say, well, I haven't done the third step, but this is what I think. and you pontificate for an hour and a half. Well, there's some guy sitting next to you who's actually done the third step or somebody who's done the fourth step. So this is about our stories. The secret is in our stories. It's our stories that disclose. The reason why alcoholics, why this system we have works so well is because people are dying to hear the truth. You see, alcoholics can see through phoniness. Hey, who better to see through phony balonies than phonies? You know, like I'm a card-carrying phony. I'm a card-carrying hypocrite. You know, when I was going to say the Lord's Prayer, I said to my sponsor, I don't want to say the Lord's Prayer. He says, why? He says, well, I don't know whether I believe in God. I don't want to be a hypocrite. He said, too late. You crash through the hypocrite gate way before you get into alcoholic, you know? Oh, you mean saying one thing and doing another? Forget it, Russ. You're already there. Hypocrites Anonymous. You know, and the body, so alcoholics, and what happens with us is when you come up here and you're talking for the podium, you can't sit around here and BS people. They'll see through you in a second. You know, you got to be transparent, which is what scares the crap out of alcoholics who are used to, like, phoning up and trying to play a game and act like, and will they like this, will they like that? I mean, to come up here and expose yourself when you know they're all looking at you and they see exactly what's really going on, you know, and you can't do that to you. It's a scary experience, but it's a refreshing, it's an incredible experience. if you work these steps and you become transparent and honest with yourself, and people recognize when you're being authentic, authenticity. We're just dying for authenticity. You know, just tell me. And so the secret really is in the stories. So one of the things I try to share is stories. It's just not only the big book and the 12 and 12 and, you know, and our words and the stuff that, you know, that we live by here and that we all agree by, but also my stories, how this actually works in my life. You know, that's how I got it. I hung around people that I wanted what they had. You know, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, you got to develop some sort of we. And if you're around here enough and you have that desire, which is what I want to talk about, you will find your we. You will find those people in the group that you would like. Not that you put them up on a pedestal, but maybe you do a little bit with the understanding that they could fall and they could drink. But I always want to have people, even to this day. I'm 62 years old. I'll have 31 years in January. And I trust me, if you knew me, if you hung around me, a lot of guys I sponsor here, they know I'm constantly with my sponsor or constantly with older people. One of the reasons I started Bible study when I was 15 years, you know, When you're around for 31 years, something like that, you get a different perspective on things. Because you've been around long enough so you can see this disease play out over 30 years. You know, you can go for 10 or 15 years drinking and thinking you're okay and arguing to people that you're okay and you got no problems until you explode. And that's when you're drinking. Do you know how long you can go in pain and agony, living lives of quiet desperation, as a thumb-sucking crybaby after you stop drinking? If you don't really get to the point in this deal where you get emotional sobriety, you'd be surprised. You could stay sober for a long period of time and be miserable before you explode. And one of the great things is I've sort of seen this thing play out. You hang around here for 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, and you see what happens to people. You see there is a separation. You see the separation. You may not see the separation at 6 years, or at 10 years, or at 15, but around 30 years, you see the people who drink at 20 years. You see the people that drink at 15 years and at 10 years. You see the people at 20 years that don't have any relationship with anybody and are lonely and angry. You see what happens because the drinking is really... Now, what gets us in here is the drinking, so we think it's the biggest deal. And since all we do is celebrate the drinking and the not drinking, that's what they give out the medallions for, right? You could be a serial rapist, you know what I mean? You got 20 years, we're giving you a medallion, it don't matter. You could be a serial killer. You could be the Dexter of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can walk in with blood on you, all over you, but the bottom line is, if you got 20 years, come up here, you got a medallion, because that's what we celebrate around here. But the fact of the matter is that as important as not drinking is, it's a big deal. Once you get here in here and you stop drinking, it's just a small piece of the deal. And there's a lot of people that don't want to hear that. They want to turn this into a not drinking club. And you could sit around here and identify with the jaywalk all you want and the drinking all you want, and it's a sad deal if you've been around here for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and you can't identify with we've experienced much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had never dreamed. If you sincerely take this position, all sorts of remarkable things have happened to you. You know, the great fact is just this and nothing less. You know, that we believe that our hearts and minds have changed because we believe with certainty that our Creator lives in our hearts and our minds. He has done for us what we cannot do for ourselves. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. You know, it's a sad thing not to identify with that, because you want to know something? They wrote that in the big book. And they wrote that in the big book because that was their experience and that was their truth. And to hang around here and not experience that and not understand that and say, I know what they're talking about because I have that on a permanent basis, because that's my life today, to have that is a sad deal. And, you know, it takes some time to get that deal. And I'm not saying in any way, don't let anybody think I'm saying, well, he's graduated or he's finally got there. I struggle with still, there's still things I struggle with. You know, once you get here and you find out, after you've been here for a month or two or six or ten, and you realize, hey, I think I'm crazy too, You know, somewhere around 18 or 20 months or 3 years, you get the feeling that, you know, the alcohol was bad, but I think what the real problem is I'm crazy. And you are crazy. You suffer from alcoholism, which is a dis-ease. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So the reason we drink alcohol is not because it's the bad thing. It's because the thing that works best to cure us of alcoholism. We happen to call it alcoholism because alcohol works the best for us. No woman, no suit of clothes, no amount of money ever worked for me quite as good and quite as fast as just a few drinks. And that's why I drank it, and that's why you drank it. You know, the moment I saw alcohol, I never really experienced alcoholism, because the moment alcoholism raised its ugly head 10 miles away, whatever I was doing, I would turn to somebody and say, I need a drink. I experienced something called drunk. And if you've experienced drunk, that's what we experience when we try not to experience alcoholism. See, when you don't want to experience alcoholism, which has to do with breathing and living life awake and aware without booze, if you don't like that deal, you do something like get drunk. Because getting drunk is far superior than to have to live in this crummy world with crummy people with a mind that is constantly thinking about yourself, bad thoughts about yourself and other people. And then you come in here and you stop drinking. Hooray, it's great, because all of a sudden the pressure's off until you realize that you still got the disease. And now what are you going to do? Because you don't have your favorite drug to use. So you then find out what Bill Wilson was talking about, the next frontier, emotional sobriety, unhealthy dependencies. And you find out that we got a lot of old ideas and old addictions. You know what it says? Alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. We got a lot of symptoms. We got a lot of addictions. You know what it says? If we can't get rid of it, the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Man, we got to get rid of these old ideas. And we find out what we find. If you think it took a long time, how many years did it take you of drinking? And I assume that most of you guys had little hints along the way that maybe you had a drinking problem. Maybe somebody along the way said, don't you think you're drinking too much? Or the judge said, we have to take away your license. I would assume that somewhere along the way you got little hints that drinking was a problem. But you ignored it, or you told the guy to go to hell, or whatever it is. Well, let me ask you something. How many years do you think it takes to realize that lust is a problem? To realize that romantic idealism and dreams are a problem. To realize that that greed is a problem. You know, how many credit cards have to be taken away? How much do you have to... My God, I spent more money I didn't have on things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like than you could ever possibly imagine, living way above my means dishonestly. Dishonestly. In AA. I'd earn six-figure salaries. You know, I was 9 years sober before I realized if you spend more money than you make, you go into debt. I didn't realize that, and I was a math major, you know what I mean? And the bottom line is, I'm a guy who earns a six-figure salary, and I was always broke. How do you earn a six-figure salary if you always be broke? How do you do that? You know how you do that? You live the life of a lie. You buy things you don't need. You spend money you don't have. You know, you don't think that's an addiction? When you're compelled to do that all the time, any way you can, and rationalize that it's okay and there's no problem, you think there's not sexual... Man, I'll tell you, you hang around here and you see this whole thing play out, and people get into a disastrous life and disastrous relationships. You see the whole thing play out, and you see what alcoholism looks like and how it's reflected in people's lives without the booze. You see it. You see them die without the booze. You know how many guys I've sponsored who have died because they're addicted to women? You know how many women I've seen who die because they're addicted to men? You start learning about alcoholic code in here, you know? How's your four-step coming? You know, I'm working on it. That's code. Stay out of my life, I ain't never going to do it. You know? I don't give a crap what other people think about me. That's code. What they're really saying is all I do is think about other people and what they think about me. You know? That guy Russell, he's a jerk. What an idiot he is. You know, I can't stand them. That's code for I feel so crummy about myself and so lousy about myself that I need to talk crap about other people behind their back to make me feel better. Because if I can't talk crap about other people behind their back, I'll be thinking about myself and I'll feel horrible. So somehow I need to do that. Think bad things about other people and talk about behind my back. That's code. That's how you got to recognize the alcoholic code. There's all sorts of codes in here. Like, you know, if a gal comes up to me after, you got to recognize these codes. Like when a woman comes up to me after meeting and says, will you sponsor me? And I say, I don't sponsor women. I'll be your friend. I'll help you out, but I don't sponsor women. He says, you need to get a woman to sponsor. She says, I don't do well with women. I do well with men. I said, no. No, your problem is men. That's how, when she tells you that, what she's really saying is, I have a problem with men. She doesn't know she's saying that. She's saying, I work well with men. What she's really saying is, I have a problem with men. That my whole life is because I have a problem with men. And what she has to do is the thing she absolutely doesn't want to do. Develop relationships with women. You see, alcoholics say all sorts of things, and they believe it, all sorts of lies and stuff that are killing them. They don't believe. There's all sorts of addiction, just riddled with fear and addiction and crummy ways of thinking that's ruining their lives, but they don't see it. You know, if it takes 10 or 15 years before you give up alcohol, it may take 30 years before you give up all that other crap. We're going to learn about that when we talk about sex, step seven, when we talk about the new perspectives. You know, money, you know, romance and prestige, you know, deprecating. We're going to learn that in the seventh step next week. We're going to talk a little more about that. I want to talk about a little something else today about sex step six, which is sort of like the precursor to that. But, you know, I sort of give you a little view on that because you really have to, when you start getting into this thing, you really have to go a little bit. If you really want to get the hope, if you really want to get to the other side, you know, and some, not everybody wants this. Not everybody wants what I'm talking about. You know, it says if you want what we have and are willing to go, not everybody, don't mistake, don't believe that everybody wants emotional or spiritual sobriety. Some people, all they want to do is not, I just want to not drink and stay away from me and get my old life back. That's just the deal. I'll tell you a little story on that. And then, you know, it's interesting. Step six, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. This is the step, that's what it says. It says, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. This is the step that separates, it is the step that separates the men from the boys. And I guess the women from the girls, or whatever that is. This is the separation. You know, in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, as you all know, if you've read that, or maybe if you haven't, if you've been hanging around here, it gives the whole history of AA during the first 10 years or so, certainly during the first 4 years. And as you all know, the big book was published in 1939. AA started in 1935. So between 1935 and 1939, they didn't have any big book. So when you read in the big book, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Their path was not reading the big book. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't read the big book. I'm a student of the big book and the 12 and 12. But understand, if you really want to, if they're saying, rarely have we seen a person do what we've done and not get this thing, they're saying, rarely have we seen a person do, not do what we've, and a lot of people think what they're really saying is, do whatever the hell you want to do and you'll get it anyway. That's not what they're saying. So the truth of the matter is, what they didn't, what they did do during that first 4 years, and don't believe me, read, I implore you, if you're serious, read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. What they did was they were fixated on the Bible. Fixated on it. And let me tell you something, that thing happened. The Bible was in AA rooms, and still is in a lot of them, and a lot of our big book comes out of the Bible. As a matter of fact, the three books that they said were absolutely essential was the Book of James. We were almost called the James Club. Sermon on the Mount, and when I first came in, they gave me a copy of Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount, which was his commentary, but you still read Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, and 1 Corinthians 13. Which is called the love chapter. And much of the stuff, if not all of the stuff, in our fellowship, whether you like it or not, it doesn't matter whether you like it. I'm not asking you to like it or hate it or whatever it is, you know. I mean, you might want to read that part if you're talking about step two, where we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. You know, I mean, a lot of people, when they come to AA, and they start listening to the fellowship, which is made up of six alcoholics, by the way. You know, this ain't well people's. You understand this ain't well people's anonymous. You understand that if we didn't have a big book, if we didn't have this stuff in writing, we just relied on fellowship, we'd all be drinking today. Who knows what would be going on? There's a lot of stuff said in AA rooms that has nothing to do with what's really going on in the book. See, you'll hear people say, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious, and put down religion when AA looked up to religion. When Bill Wilson was sponsored basically by Ed Dowling and Sam Shoemaker, where they encouraged church membership. Where we say we lose all prejudice. We lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. We begin to see where those people are right. So, but if you didn't read the big book, if you didn't know what our steps are all about and what it means and what a sober person actually looks like, you would think the loudest guy bitching in the room about the Catholic Church is some sort of icon as to what AA is. That's not what AA is at all. That's opposite AA. You know what that is? That's alcoholism. Being pissed off at religion, pissed off at religious people, having a chip on your shoulder. You know what that is? That's pure, unadulterated non-sobriety. But if you're the loudest guy in the room, you get noticed, and people think, well, I mean, that's the cool thing to do. That's what we're supposed to do around here. When that's not it at all, it shows something else about you. When you talk about other people behind their back, when you gossip, when you put down the church, when you put down stuff like that. So it says, this is the step that separates man, and it is a great separation that happens in here. And I want to talk about that. And one of the things that they said was the essential reading material is 1 Corinthians 13. And in 1 Corinthians 13 is a love chapter, you know, it talks about faith, hope, and love. And in 1 Corinthians 13, it says the following. One of the lines it says, and I'm sort of going to try to paraphrase, it says, when I was a child, you guys ever watch Alcoholics in AA? You ever watch them when they're crying? You know, when I came in here, I joined, you know, there's two groups in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the first group I joined, I don't know about you, I joined the thumb-sucking crybabies. That lasted for about 15 years, you know what I mean? And then there's another group, and they talk about it in the back of the big book, they call the group the Fellowship of the Spirit. You know, you can stop drinking, the desire not to stop drinking, you just walk right into the thumb-sucking crybabies. You go to a lot of discussion meetings and cry about your mother, your sister, your father, your aunt, your life, and all that sort of stuff. But the Fellowship of the Spirit is a different deal. That's where they talk about, see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Fellowship of the Spirit actually comes from the Bible. This is a fellowship of the Holy Spirit. The Apostle Paul talked about it. It talks about people that are focused on God and only spiritual things. Not people that are whining about how their car is broken down or they have a crummy life or stuff like that. It's a different type of deal. And the bottom line is that when you come in here and you start talking about the separating men from boys, in 1 Corinthians 13, there's this line. It says, when I was a child, I've raised four children in Alcoholics Anonymous, three daughters, and I have six grandchildren, four granddaughters. You know, and they're all between, the granddaughters are all between the ages of, you know, some like 4 and 8. Have anybody ever been around young kids? Watch how they act and watch how they talk. You know, watch how they are. Really not much different than alcoholics, right? Really, right? You ever go to discussion meetings and stuff? It's sort of like, it's kind of interesting to see a 50-year-old man sucking his thumb. A 30-year-old woman sucking her thumb, you know? Crybabies. Whining about everything. Always thinking about themselves. This is what 1 Corinthians 13 says. It says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I became a man, I put childish things away. This is about putting childish things away. Now, let me tell you a little story. This is a true story. You know, it says our stories disclose. This is a true story. When I was 15 years sober, I had started a Bible study because, and I'm not going to go into that story. It's another story. It doesn't matter. It's part of my spiritual journey. I've had guys in NA come to AA meeting with 15 years sobriety, come to AA meetings, they're in NA, come to AA meetings, say, don't tell anybody I'm here, and they come to AA because they want more. Because as good as NA is, and AA is, I'm sure, a wonderful program, there's a lot of good people in there, when you get, back then, when you got 15 years in NA, you were like on top of the iceberg. So if you needed somebody who had 20 or 25 years, you had to sort of walk on over to an AA meeting. And make believe nobody saw you, you know, because they would be mad at you for going. So I had a lot of guys in NA that would show up in AA meetings, you know, just sort of hanging out because they wanted more. Because they wanted more. They knew there was something more. They knew there was something more out there. They needed more because to stop growing and to stop having a growth and a maintenance of that spiritual condition is to die in here. And so they had to get more. And so they came over to AA, and I understand that deal. I understand that desire to get more. And so in AA, when I start getting 15, 16, 20 years, even though a lot of people, I wanted more. And so you start realizing, you get, and it's not that you leave AA, hang around AA, but I wanted more. And somebody, you know, God sends these little Eskimos into your life, and some guy asked me, have I ever been to Bible study? So I started going to this Bible study, and I'd walk in this room, and there'd be guys that were 80, 70, 60, 70, and 80 years old. I was like maybe, you know, whatever, 40. 60, 70, 80 years old, and they've been studying the Bibles for 40 years, 45 years. Some were alcoholics, recovering alcoholics. They've been around for a long time. I got my last sponsor, John Glenn. You know, he's 57 years sober in a Bible study. Because they had more. They had something I didn't have. They had something down the road, and I wanted that deal. You know, if you hang around here long enough and you want, you're going to run into people. You're going to say, I don't know what it is. I like that guy. I want what that guy has. I want what that gal has. You're going to hang out. You're going to ask me your sponsor. You're going to want to be around them. In the next 5 years, the person you turn into will be basically the people you hang out with and the books you read. And the books you read will depend on who you hang out with. You will become that which you fix your eyes on. If you're a womanizer and all you do is think about broads and all you do is think about that stuff, you will find guys in here. Believe me, that group is in here. This is the same group you're hanging out with in the bar, talking the same crap, but not drinking scotch, just drinking coffee. They're here. They show up here. So if you want somebody to talk about gals and cars and money, you can find those guys here and they'll sit in the corner or go outside and smoke and joke and laugh about the other people. And if you want people that are going to talk about other things, you'll find whatever you want in Alcoholics Anonymous. And who you hang out with has a great deal to do with, and who you talk about will determine the conversation that's going on in your mind every night when you go to sleep about who you are and what you are. And really, who you hang out with really tells me what you are all about. And it should tell you what you're all about, you know, if you're honest with yourself. So I started going to this deal. And right next to my, and I met these guys, and it was just wonderful. As a matter of fact, the guy who asked me to go there, I showed up there one Thursday. Every Thursday morning, 7:30 this morning, I was there at that Bible. I've been going there for 15 years. I ultimately joined that church, became a deacon there. We started a 12-step recovery meeting thing there called Alive Again. And this morning at 7:30, I was with 30 guys studying, you know, that's what we were doing. We were studying the Bible for an hour. And it's not much different than what we do in here, really, because most of this stuff was lifted from that. So it's not much, you know, you'd think it was an AA meeting because we talk about the same stuff. So I got the guy who invited me there. He never came back. He invited, said meet me there. I met him there on a Thursday. He left. I never saw him again, and I stayed. Go figure. Jewish kid from New York. Whatever. So in any event, I have next to my house, there's a place, there's a dry cleaner called Pierre's Cleaners. If you go there right now, you know, it's not open now, but you'll see it. It's Pierre's. It's a dry cleaner. And there's a drive-thru. You drive through and you give them your stuff. So when I was about 15 years sober, I was dropping my stuff off in the dry cleaners around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And you could see my house. From Pierre's dry cleaner, you can sort of see the roof of my house. And I drive through the dry cleaner, and this kid comes up to my car who's working in Pierre's, and his name is Leo. And Leo, I don't know how to explain this, so I'll just do the best I can. Leo was about 17 years old, 16, 17, 18, young kid. And his pants, I don't even know how to explain this. His pants were, his belt was around his knees. I can't explain it any other different. That's the only, I don't even know how to explain it. Have you seen this deal? Maybe there's a guy in here who's like that. I don't know. I'm not putting it down. I'm just reporting. You understand? His belt, I don't even know what was holding his pants up. I don't even know how you do that. Somebody's going to have to explain that. But his belt was like down here. And he was talking like this, you know, like with his hands, you know. Not pointing like this, you know, I don't even know. And he'd say, yeah, man, what can I do for you? And everything like that. And I had, you know, in my car is like not a mess, but you'll have a big book here. You'll have a 12 and 12 here. You'll have a Bible on the, you know, by the, you know, on the, what is it, that ledge? The on the dashboard and everything. And I had this big old Bible, this red Bible on the dashboard and it was all around. And so the kid looks at me and he does this. He says, you know, I got one of those. And I said, one of what? He says, one of those. And he sort of, well, it wasn't really a point. It's like that, you know? And I looked at him, I said, oh, you mean a Bible? And he said, yeah, a Bible. I got one of those. I said, yeah. I said, well, I said, what's your name? He says, Leo. I said, well, Leo, you see that house over there, the roof of that house over there? He says, yeah, yeah, I see it. I said, you know, you ever been to a Bible study? He says, no, I've never been to a Bible study. He says, I read the Bible, but I don't really understand it. I said, well, it's kind of hard to understand it. You know, it can even get boring if you do it by yourself. I said, but have you ever been to a Bible study? He says, no, I haven't. I said, I'll tell you what. Tomorrow's Thursday. I go to a Bible study every Thursday morning at 7:30. There's the roof of my house over there, okay? If you're at my house at 7:15 tomorrow morning, I'll take you to the Bible study. He says, you'll take me? He says, I'll take you to the Bible study. You can go with me. He said, okay. And then I left, and that was the end, and I took off, you know. And you know, I took off down the street because, you know, that's what we do. We carry a message. Whatever your message is, you're going to carry. Whatever you're capable of carrying, you're carrying a message. However, you're going to walk into people, and they're either going to say, who was, you know, and you want, you know, you walk away from people, they're going to say, who was that guy? Who was that gal? What was that deal? You're going to be changing people's lives, just like people changed my life. You know, and the bottom line, not for the worst, but for the better. Because we're going to be, because our job is to be of maximum service to God and other people. Now, they're not necessarily alcoholics. You know, I mean, as alcoholics, we hurt everybody. We hurt alcoholics and non-alcoholics. We hurt everybody. And our job is to be of maximum service to whoever God puts in our place. And so the bottom line, but here's the deal. So I took off, did my work, you know, whatever it is, dropped off my clothes, and I forgot about Leo. I really forgot about him. And obviously I'm telling the story because something happened which made me remember Leo. So now it's a story I tell in meetings. So the next morning I got up and I walk outside, and who do you think is sitting by my car?
Leo.
With a Bible in his hand. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning. This, and I had forgotten all about it. He said, I'm here. And I said, well, so you are. We'll get in the car. I'll take it. So we drove over the Bible study. And we sat there. And those guys are pretty cool. Now, you got to understand, all those guys are like 60, 70, 80, and 90. I mean, you know, I was probably like 45, and I was like the baby. You know what I mean? I mean, these guys are like every other guy had a pacemaker. You know? And if your heart is pumping, you're like, it's like amazing in there. They're excited about you, you know? So I walk in with this kid who's like 16 years old. They're like going nuts, you know? So we go around, we're talking about whatever we talk about, whatever verse we're talking about in the Bible. And he doesn't say much, you know? And then at the end, I think he raised his hand and he says, I think Jesus was an alien. And, you know, but these guys...
That's a good one.
No, but, maybe. So whatever, but these guys are cool. I mean, they're serious, you know, guys, but they're cool. And you know what they said to him? What do you think they said to him? They said what we said. They said, keep coming back. You know, and so we're driving away and from the church, and he says, so what do you think? You know, I said, hey, they loved you, kid. They love you great. You know, you're doing this great. And so he started telling me a little about himself. And he said, and I found out that, you know, his mother, he didn't have a father, never had a father, never knew his father. That his mother raised him, and his mother had like a little girl who was like 3 years old from another guy, and she was with another guy now, and she's just doing the best she can with what she's got. And he's like a young kid trying to do the best he can, not an addict or an alcoholic, without a father, you know, alone in the world trying to figure out how things work, you know, and just doing that deal. And so, you know, I was talking to him, he's just a good kid, you know, and we're driving along, and I'm driving him towards my house because that's where I picked up, and he says, would you mind if you could drop me off at my house? I said, no, I don't mind. So we got to around where my house is, and I said, how do I get there? And he says, well, drive down that street and make a right at the stop sign. And so I drive down the street and made a right at the stop sign. And then he said, well, drive down, and he says, make a left at that light. So I drove down and made a left at the light. And he gave some more directions, a right here, a left there. And pretty soon I'm, you know, 5 or 6 miles away from my house. And I come up to this row of townhouses. He says, that's my house. And so I stop the car, and I say to him, I say, who dropped you off? Who dropped you off at my house? How'd you get there? And he says, I walked. He says, he got up at 3:30 in the morning.
Oh, boy.
He got up at 3:30 in the morning because he didn't want to miss me. And he showered and he grabbed his Bible, And he walked to my house, whatever it is, 6 miles. And he actually got there at like at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? An hour before he got out, and he just waited for me. That was Leo. That's what Leo did. That's how badly he wanted to go to Bible study. That's how badly he wanted to go there. Do you know how many times I've seen that kind of desire in Alcoholics Anonymous? Slim and none. And Slim's left town. Very, very rarely do you see that deal going on here. See, I can do a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous. They say 0.5% stay sober more than 20 years. And even some of those guys more than 20 years are not happy with their sobriety. Talks about not being happy with their sobriety. And the bottom line is it says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman. There he is, a clergyman, a religious guy, who happens to be one of A's greatest friends. He goes on to explain how much of this did we get from clergymen. These guys listened to these guys because they wanted to learn. They weren't intolerant. The Bible and clergymen, religion wasn't a dirty word. You know, I know some of you guys are at a much higher plane than me. You're spiritual, not religious. I just don't have the quality of spirituality. I really don't. I honestly don't. I'm not a spiritual guy. I was a selfish, self-centered crybaby my entire life, self-pityaholic, feeling sorry for myself all my life, and I will always be that until the day I die. And any decency you see in me today, anything you see in today that makes you feel that I'm selfish or I'm decent or I'm a good guy is merely a reflection of the God of my understanding based upon my relationship with Him. He is doing for me what I can't do for myself. I claim no credit for anything that's decent in me right now. You know why? Because I know myself and I know other people in AA, and I've seen what happens to people. It's like being right-handed. My default position is being right-handed. I'll always feel more comfortable being right-handed. No matter how much I train, there's nothing wrong with being left-handed, but no matter how much I train to be left-handed or right with my left hand, I'll always want to be right-handed. And I've seen what happens to me and other people if I stop reading the Bible, if I stop praying, if I stop meditating, if I stop trying to help other people, if I stop hanging around with the people I hang out with or hang around with my sponsor, if I stop going to meetings, I see exactly what I have. And for me to tell you that I have the quality of spirituality would be a lie. You may be spiritual, not religious, but spiritual. I've never been able to get that quality. All I have is whatever spirituality I have. And you know, I've read the big book, and you ought to read the big book when it talks about spirituality. And it's always spoken about in relation to being of maximum service with God, to God, and looking at Him. So you know that your relationship with Him is right. And it's never sort of like you got it by yourself, like some sort of quality, and you graduate, and all of a sudden you get a degree in spirituality. It's always about your spirituality is always in the big book based upon your decision and your reliance upon God. Job or no job, wife or no wife, nobody say you can't. The whole thing depends upon your relationship with God, trust house, and you know, clean house and trust Him. And that's the bottom line. That's what I say. And it says right here, he goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly on step 6 on all his faults without any reservations has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled. And this is really the standard they set down for the men from the boys. This is the standard set down by this clergyman that we adopt. You may not like the standard, but this is the standard. Has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own Creator. That's what it says right up front. A person trying to, you know, listen, you may want to stop drinking. You may want to stop drinking. You may want to feel better. You may want to get money. You may want to get your job or your wife or something like that. But I'll tell you something, the separation comes when you're a man who's trying, according to this, we're trying repeatedly to grow in the image and likeness of your own Creator. Now, you know something? I can do a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you can do a lot of things, but I can't manufacture desire. I cannot turn you into Leo. Leos, I know this. I know Leos happen in AA. Leos happen outside of AA. They are few and far between. There are people that will come into AA and they will get sobriety, they will get sober, and that's all they'll get. And a few other things, and they'll stop and they'll go out there and looking for the breast implants, looking for the new cars, looking for everything in the world that'll sort of get their deal going, just gathering up the stuff, you know, that they think will make them feel okay. And then there are people that'll come into Alcoholics Anonymous and they'll want more. They'll have the same desire. They'll be showing up. They'll be walking 6 miles. They'll be going to places. They'll be driving places. You know, it's just an interesting thing to me. I'll have a guy, I drive, you know, I go all over. I'll be up in Boca Raton. I'll be up in Carl Springs. I'll drive where I'm going to drive to do this stuff. And the other day I was up in Boca Raton, and I did a meeting, some young people's meeting. There's a bunch of people there. And I drove, it was about 40, I think Jesse went with me, we drove 60 miles. And I did this meeting. We had dinner, and we did this meeting. It was 60 miles. And this kid comes up to me after the meeting, and this is what he says to me. He says, "Wow, I really like what you had to say. I want what you have." And he says, "You know, where can I find, what can I do?" And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what. We have," and I told him this. I said, "We have a meeting on Saturday morning at Old Colored Presbyterian Church at 9:30 in Miami. Why don't you come there?" And he said to me this. He looked at me without skipping a beat. He says, "Boy, that's a long way." I said, "You know, it is. It is. You see, he wants it, but he doesn't really, he's not a Leo. He's not a Leo. It was a long way for me, too. I didn't even think twice about it." You know, there are people that will go the extra yard, the extra distance. They'll think nothing of it. They'll devote their life because they want this stuff. And there are other people, it's just, you know something? It's just a long way. It's just a long drive. You know what I'm talking about? They got better things to do. And besides, the Dolphins are playing tonight. And it's all, and let me tell you something. It's, many are called, but few are chosen. Don't make the mistake of saying that everybody in AA wants this deal. What they want is they want to stop drinking, and they get pissed at you if you go off that topic. Because if you go off that topic and they're not doing it, it's almost like them saying that you should do this thing, and they're not in it for extra credit. It goes on to say, it talks about the degree of readiness. It says this: some people, of course, may conclude that they are indeed ready to have all such defects taken away from them. But even these people, if they construct a list of still milder defects, will be obliged to admit that they prefer to hang on to some of them. Therefore, it seems plain that few of us can quickly or easily become ready to aim at spiritual and moral perfection. We want to settle for only as much perfection as will get us by in life, according, of course, to our various and sundry ideas of what will get us by. That's what we want to do. And that's what I want to do. I don't say I'm perfect at this thing. That's my natural fallback position. My natural fallback position is I just want to be happy. I just want to be comfortable. As soon as I'm comfortable, I rest on my laurels. As soon as I'm comfortable and I'm feeling okay and there's money in the bank, you want to know something? 60 miles is just too far to drive for a meeting. It's just too far. You know, Thursday nights is just too much. I've already done a meeting today. I don't have to come up here and talk to you guys. It's just too far. It's just too much. I don't want to be a fanatic about this. It's just too much work. Now, I used to stay in the bar from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 4 o'clock in the morning, 12 hours. That was no problem at all. But two meetings a day, when I've got almost 31 years, what am I doing two meetings? What am I, crazy? What do I have that's better to do than to hang out with you and do it? Why did God allow me to get sober so I could stay at home and, like, watch TV? Watch the Dolphins. I mean, go to a play. Why? Why? If not to do this. If not to do this, why would I get any meaning out of life? I mean, I did that other life. Watching TV and gathering up stuff and going to do and doing that deal. It never worked for me. According, of course, to our various and sundry ideas of what'll get us by. So the difference between the men and the boys is the difference between striving for a self-determined objective, what I want, right? And for the perfect objective, which is of God. You know, let me tell you something. There's what I want and what I would like to make me happy. You know what I mean? And you know what that has to do with, right? We all know what that has to do with. It has to do with all the stuff you hear at discussion meetings. What are they wanting about these days? Money, right? Sex? If I only had a guy, if I only had a gal, relationships, romance, what are they wanting about in discussion meetings? Well, just listen to your next discussion meeting. Go to a few discussion meetings. Listen to what they're talking about. That's what they want. That's what'll get them by. That's what everybody in AA wants. That's what they think AA is about. Getting around the discussion meetings and talking about stuff. And talking about that stuff. You understand? As if we got it, it would make us happy. It would never cure us. That's not what AA is about. That's what alcoholics talk about when they get together. That's the disease. That's the problem. They talk about the stuff that's killing us. The stuff. It's like if you went to an AA meeting and all they did was talk about drinking. That's all they're talking about. They're talking about the other addictions. The other stuff that they got to have that they don't have, that they're scared they're going to lose. All about that fear. This is talking about the difference between striving for a self-determined objective and for the perfect objective, which is of God. Many will at once ask, how can we accept the entire implication of step 6? Why, that is perfection. This sounds like a hard question, but practically speaking, it isn't. Only step 1, where we made 100% admission, where powerless over alcohol can be practiced with absolute perfection. The remaining 11 steps stay perfect ideals. You know, it says before, later on, it says this is just the attitude, the kind of attitude we have to have. So step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, is A's way of stating the best possible attitude. You know, command from the boys, putting away childish things. You know, putting away childish things. There are some people that will hear me talk, and this is what they'll think. They'll say, you know, it's a bit much. No, I'm serious. They'll say it's a bit much. It's a bit heavy-handed. Who does this guy think it is? Sounds like a fanatic. Let me tell you something. Our disease is fanatical. Alcoholism is fanatical. It'll kill you. Unless you have fanatical recovery, you're going to have a problem. And I'm going to tell you something else. There are some people that will hear this talk, and it won't seem fanatical at all. Did you know that? Trust me, I've been around 30 years. I know this. There are some people who say, this is the craziest guy in the room, stay away from him. And there are other people that hear this talk and they'll say, that's what I want. You know, I know when I'm talking to a group, you know, I may be only talking to two guys. And I never know who the two guys are. And you know, or two gals. And you know the funny thing is, it may not even be the guy who's getting it. I may be talking to somebody in this group and saying, this guy is crazy, and 5 years from now he's saying, because I've been around long enough so this happens, I used to think you're crazy, but now I love you. Because some of us have to get beat up pretty bad before we learn this. You know, sometimes you got to drink a lot. I didn't have a bad Saturday night. I didn't go out and have one drink and a bad Saturday night and said, gee, I think I got to stop drinking. I had to get pounded really bad by life and by booze in order to say, I need help, I can't stop drinking. You may have to go through a lot of romantic relationships, spend a lot of money, do a lot of crap, and ruin your life and wake up, you know, if you're 20 years now, you may have to, 20 years old now, you may have to wake up at 40 years, you know, alone on the street before you realize, I need help. It's not only the drink, and I need to change my life completely. I need other things. You may, to realize this thing. I realize you're not going to go to an AA meeting and hear some speaker and say, and dive right into it. Some people are going to get fired up, and some people just need to go out and test the waters. See what it's like to try to do this thing without making the spiritual change and point in that direction. You know, the direction where you're focusing on God and being of maximum service to Him. And you know something? It is fanatical. I know it is fanatical. It is a crazy thing to think that you would spend your life sort of like an AA, or going to church, or trying to associate with people like that, or going to Bible study, or trying to help other people, or being a goody-two-shoes. It is kind of, you know, fanatical. I suppose if most people heard this when they first came into the treatment, they'd be out the door. Maybe that's true. I don't really know. I know sometimes I speak to new people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're excited. They're excited because they want something. They're Leos. They want something different. Sometimes it's the older members that get a little pissed off. The guys that are sort of complacent, resting on our laurels, saying, I'm doing okay. I'm fine the way I am. Don't mess with my deal. Well, I'm not messing with anybody. I'm just reading step 6. Hey, listen, if you have an argument, your argument is not with me. Your argument is with this book that talks about aiming for moral perfection. That's your argument. So just be honest. Don't say you don't like. I may be presenting it and you don't like what I'm saying, but just say, I don't like AA. I don't want to do this deal. I want to do it my way. You know, I don't want to be so straight. I don't want to do it. I don't like the way, you know, he's pointing out all these things. So thank you very much. Next week we'll do step 7.